Monahan. I'm going to kind of start it where Atlanta Blue Sky is now, and then we'll back up and describe the hell it was getting it to this point. We started just about a year ago. I partnered with two other people, and we expanded to four streams instead of just one alternative stream, and we now stream to about 500,000 people a month, which is mind-boggling to me. It's seen tremendous growth. It's tied to we have an association with Microsoft Windows. We're one of their preferred streams, and through that we generate revenue through banner ads primarily, and we also offer premium subscription audio services. Now, to back up to what it was about 4 years ago, it was as simple as me being bored one weekend and clicking on a link to listen to radio over the computer, which I thought was just fascinating that somebody could do internet broadcasting over a PC that you could listen to at home. And geek that I am, I decided to tear into it and see if it was possible to do it myself. And I was shocked to find out how easy it was to assemble the hardware, most of it, all of it at that time, free, and begin generating a stream, which we sent to my office, and the eight of us that I worked with at Bank of America at the time sat around and decided what we wanted to listen to that day, and I would program it for everybody, and we just got the biggest kick out of eight people listening to music coming out of my home. From that, a really bizarre set of circumstances sort of unfolded. We began to get, I think it was after about 4 months, we had 100 people listening in over the course of a month. And we thought that was fantastic, 100 people tuning into to our little broadcast. And then the record industry decided to really kind of, in my opinion, stamp out internet radio. I come from a background where I was working for both Warner Brothers and Capitol in the past, and I can tell you that a great deal of money goes into promoting artists, and a great deal of money goes into controlling what actually gets to commercial airwaves. It's an ugly system, and I got fed up with it and I left. And that's how I ended up at Bank of America for a while. About this time, I had started an association with the company that had also just begun at that time to create software to help implement doing an internet broadcast. It handled programming, it handled throwing liners in, somebody saying you're listening to Atlanta Blue Sky, that kind of thing. So it was a great piece of software. It too was free at the time. I had gotten to, I'd call in for tech support, and much like my little company, if you called us for tech support, you got me. And in his case, I got the owner, the guy that owned spatialaudio.com. And Brian, who owned that, had, I would think about, at that time, about 50 or 60 broadcasters tied together that were trying to give this a go, trying to see if we could do something different with radio apart from what we were hearing on the airwaves, which I think everybody by this point in time is, for the most part, tired of. Yeah, sick of is a good way of putting it. It's been condensed to the least likely to succeed format, and it's owned and operated by a handful of people in the country. It's kind of sad. But Brian, so through Spatial Audio, there were about 50 or 60 of us that had begun this community, and we talked out problems. We talked out what we needed the software to do. And out of the blue comes the RIAA, which is the Recording Institute Association of America, and they wanted to put a stop to internet radio. Hearings came up in Washington, and Brian was going to represent Spatial Audio. Well, at the time, I was staying in Virginia Beach taking care of an ill parent, and as luck would have it, Brian couldn't get a flight out. and called me the night before and said, would you sit in for us at the Library of Congress hearings? And I said, in Washington, D.C.? And he said, yes. And I said, well, you're going to have to send me about 15 pounds of paper about what it is I've got to say. I never imagined doing something like this. But he sent me the paperwork. I took the drive up to Washington and walked into a room about not much bigger than this, actually, except that everybody on this side of the table was either a congressional representative, an attorney for the record industry, attorneys for Yahoo, for America Online, and what was the other? There was another, Music Match, which were, at that point in time, those companies all wanted a piece of internet streaming audio. So these hearings were held to decide what, if anything, internet radio should pay in order to broadcast. An interesting concept, because back when AM radio started out and it was all talk, nobody cared. When they started spinning records in the early 50s, they did, the RIAA did the exact same thing to broadcast radio. They came in and said, you know, gee, that's great, you're playing our records. We're going to charge you X amount of thousands of dollars per year to continue to play our music. Well, great thing happened in that, that you wouldn't see today. All of the radio stations collectively said, no, we're not going to pay to play your records. We're promoting your artists, so no, we're not going to do it. If you force us to do it, we'll stop playing the records. So the industry had to weigh its options, and sort of a marriage in hell was made between radio and the record industry, and what's known as terrestrial radio, regular radio that you get in your car, avoided those fees. Fast forward almost 45, 50 years later, here they come back on the internet broadcasters to do the same thing, which was to basically bleed us of funds for promoting their artists. And ironically, when you sample internet radio, you'll find that one of the greatest things about it is the variety, is the fact that you can turn on a station and hear an artist that doesn't get played anywhere else but that station. And so here we are actually promoting music and doing our best to give exposure to people that don't get it because of the way the industry functions. And they were going right for our jugular. And they succeeded. They came back, and I forget the exact numbers. Scott might remember, because he remembers the turmoil we went through at the station that time, because we actually got to the point where we turned everything off, simply because in order to stay online, it was going to cost us $3,000 a month. And that was just out of the question. There was no way we were doing it. I was running this out of my bedroom, for crying out loud, as a lot of broadcasters were. So we decided to turn the broadcast off. We were real fortunate. We had, by that time, started to develop an audience. The real windfall out of going to these hearings was that somebody here in Atlanta heard about it, mentioned it to Ron Ho, who writes for the entertainment section of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Ron called me and asked if he could do a story on the station. I said, sure. So we got press in the AJC. Creative Loafing saw it and felt left out. They wanted to do a story. The Atlantic Magazine did the same thing. They did a story. And then right after that, the most amazing thing, I got a call from somebody at Microsoft and said, would you be interested in being one of our listed stations? And I said, well, yeah. And our listeners went instantly, from the day we were listed with Microsoft, we went from that group of 100 streams a day to 1,000 the very first day we were listed with Microsoft. And the growth was phenomenal. What was really cool was that, we still try to maintain, and I still keep in touch with a whole lot of our original core group of listeners. When we got forced to turn it off, they collectively, one listener in particular, wrote me an email and said, we don't want you to turn it off. How much will it take to keep it going? And I said, gee, I don't know. They're saying $3,000 a month. I don't know. And they said, well, he said, I want to start a donation drive. We want to start offering to keep this thing afloat. So the listeners, we started it off as a donation thing, and listeners started contributing money to keep us on the air, and we turned it back on. I think we were off a total of 2 weeks, if that. And the funds, enough funding came in that we felt like we could get it back online and keep it going. So from there, we decided to turn that into a subscription audio system where we, in exchange for your contribution, you got to listen to a CD quality stream with no banner ads and no commercial interruptions or anything to hinder your listening pleasure. And it just sort of... It's just sort of grown to a really interesting, bizarre way to make a living. I love doing it. I've been a music junkie for my entire life, so being a part of this has been 99% fun, 1% trouble. The RIAA did eventually back off and decided that they would charge a set fee per year, which was $2,500, and that was doable. That was a lot better than the $3,000 a month, which came out of the CARP hearings. I think a real driving force behind that was not as extreme as what radio did back in the 50s, but close. A lot of these new internet broadcasters, with the help of some big groups like Yahoo and like AOL, got together and said, you're going to kill the one thing that you've got out there that will take a chance and play a new artist, that you don't have to come in and give us a trip to Paris for two to see Fleetwood Mac to get it played. And they wised up, basically. They said, you know what, we would be cutting our own throat. So we've gotten the opportunity to play a ton of bands. I met a fella today when we got in here who's a local Atlanta musician who brought me a CD. We had the pleasure of playing some phenomenal local bands in a mix with... the other things that we play, and to give you an idea, just to show you how, tell you how it's done, and you got to the right guy. I do the web design. I listen to the music, pick out what gets played, schedule it, program it, do the customer service, do just about everything. It's still primarily a one-man operation. I do have two partners that, like I said, they came in about a year ago. And with them, we expanded into offering a jazz stream and a country stream and now a classic rock stream. And I hate country music, but I will tell you that it's the best performing stream of all that we offer. It does huge, huge numbers of listeners each day. So hats off to Sanders for that. Sanders Hickey, who is the fellow who put that together. The jazz stream does real well, too. We're targeting, trying to get it into some restaurants, which seems like a natural venue for it. And the alternative stream is still my baby. It's stumbled a bit. Quite frankly, the music has been weak for about a year. Everything sounds a little too much like Green Day, and there's not a whole lot outside of that. But I spend a lot of time trying to seek outside of that and find bands. Gosh, you were hearing The Shins and Guster on ABS 2 years ago, and you never hear that on local radio. You never hear bands like that. So I love that. I love finding bands like that, bands that deserve to be played and are just phenomenal, interesting bands. And it's great to follow their success and see some of these bands as internet radio picks them up and gives enough exposure. The tables have actually turned, and now radio watches us to some degree. In fact, for the first time ever, not only do they track digital download sales from things like iTunes, but they also track how many spins we give a particular artist. So much like they did with terrestrial radio, they're starting to pay attention to what we do and pay attention to the artists that are making some headway. And unfortunately, those are the bands they'll plop a few dollars on occasionally and try and get them a little further down the road. So it's a real it's an interesting business, and we're kind of like the Antichrist. I don't really think they know what to do with us as of yet, and I don't know what the long term will hold. More and more, I will tell you, there's not a lot of money to be made at it. You do this because you love it. And that's the only sane reason to do it. Although we get excuse me, although we see revenue from banners and from premium subscriptions, it just covers costs and maybe a little bit more. So we're staying alive after 4 years, and the audience is still growing, so we hope to see it make a little cash at some point in time. But for now, we do it primarily because we love doing it. So I would think one of the things you might be interested to know is that any type of thing, including something like this forum or any gathering that you had, or if you had a group of friends, it is so easy to do the same thing. To start it out, you can search on the internet, you can find the software. Your group would be a great example. You could actually be live broadcasting your band's music 24 hours a day over the internet from your home for almost next to no cash. And then you just go out, you have to build an audience, you have to hope they find you or buy some, which in our case was the fluke of me going to Washington got us some press, which got us some attention, and that's really where we got our audience. Otherwise, I'd probably still be broadcasting to those eight guys I used to work with. So that's pretty much the crux of it. Scott had brought it up so you could see a little bit of the website. Right now, we just abandoned all of our banner advertising to put up banners to try and generate relief for Hurricane Katrina. We've done that a couple of times. We did it with the tsunami and saw a great deal of contributions come in exchange for what they sent us. We gave them a premium subscription worth the value of their donation that then went on to the Red Cross. So we try to get involved with things like that and just be nice guys. Play a lot of good music. That's kind of the thrust of it. So there's no way I can tell you that for an hour and a half, that's like three sitcoms. I can't talk that long. So why don't we, if you've got some questions, why don't I talk to you guys? What's that?
We want to run a mic out. We're actually.
Oh, okay. Great. Great. This is a trick, but.
Thank you.
There you go.
One of the things I thought I heard from the description was the RIAA was now going after podcasts for the same thing, trying to shut them down because they couldn't control the content. Mm-hmm. So, and by trying to do exorbitant royalty fees, mm-hmm. It looked like the cycle was starting again with podcasts now. I didn't know if that was supposed to be part of this discussion or.
Well, it's a good point to touch on. I can tell you that I did a real quick look at podcasting. That too is a very simple technology. It's real easy to implement and real easy to do, again, from your home if you were interested to do that. It would be real easy for me to basically record 8 hours of our programming, turn that into a podcast, and send it back out. But there's the stumbling block. They are getting involved in looking at that because they don't. Ultimately, the record industry wants control, and they really want control of the digital world because it's not going to be long, I don't think at all, before the day of the disc you pick up and come home with is gone. There's really no future in it. It's it costs too much. They charge you $20 for something that costs them 50 cents to produce. The artists aren't seeing any benefit from that. What an artist makes off of a CD sale at a level like Capitol Records or Warner Brothers is heartbreaking. I can't tell you how many well-known bands I was on the road with that I had to buy the cheeseburgers. And these were guys that were getting airplay and were already doing, in the public's eye, very well at radio. But in reality, that money, when a band gets signed, just to tell you how it happens, when a band gets signed, they're given an advance. That money is usually spent completely on whatever equipment and traveling requirements they'll need to get on the road, such as a trailer or a bus or whatever. And then when the royalty payments come in, the band's already in the hole $500,000 before they've even put a record in the stores. And so a lot of bands, even though you hear them on the radio, one of the reasons they break up so quick is because it can be a brutal path. If you happen to join the Beatles, that's great. You're going to make some money. for a lot of the other bands, it's a long time before they see any kind of real revenue. So in direct response to your question about podcasting, I do think they're going to try to control it, and my guess is that at some point in time they'll do to podcasting what they did to internet radio. They will settle on an amount of money that you have to pay annually to do it. So that's sad.
I was wondering if you could discuss some of the problems that you may have dealt with in dealing with the bandwidth issues and the growing of your radio subscriber base and how to deal with the bandwidth and at the same time ensuring quality of service to your users.
Sure. That's a great question. That's a huge problem, because one of the things I found out real early on was, yes, I could do it from my house to those 10 people at the bank, but that was as many as could listen before my PC just blew up. Just couldn't handle it anymore. So we searched out a hosting solution, of which there are quite a few now, and the cost has come down. I have to tell you I've been very blessed in starting this business, in that we were being hosted by a company out of Switzerland, and we did it with them because they were cheaper than anybody I could find in the States. The quality was fantastic. I think the price was at that time $50 per 100 listeners, which was real reasonable. And that gave me the ability to put out a 128K stream, which is CD quality over the internet. It's extremely good quality. That company folded overnight on us. And one of the fellows that was there being hosted with me decided to start his own company. And he said, if I do this, will you sign up with me? And I said, yeah, I'll give you a shot. I haven't got any place else to go. And I'm still with him. I've been with him for 4 years now. And as we've grown, we now have an arrangement where our cost of bandwidth is paid for by the banners that we run, that run inside the media player and that run on the website. And we run a series of those banners just directly to him. So to be perfectly blunt, yeah, it's costing me to stream, but it's money that it's not coming into me initially. So I'm basically doing it for the cost of showing those banners inside of our website and on our media player while it plays. That kind of a deal is one in a million. If we were, in fact, we talked about this just the other day with my partners, if we were to have to take on the cost of streaming our country stream right now just to the number of listeners they have, and this would be the 32K stream, the small, it's a stereo stream, it's good quality, it's what Scott was playing when we first came in, but it's not 128K. But to cover his audience would cost us just about between $2,700 and $3,000 a month to go through a traditional streaming host. So the cost can get quite high. It's great when you have a small audience because it's not that expensive, but as it grows, yeah, the cost can become daunting and fast. But if you get into it I assume your point would be for music, for streaming music, okay, then quality is going to be an issue, and you wouldn't want to do anything less than 32K stereo to get a decent signal out there. But you can reach an audience of, I would say, 150 concurrent connections for about, ballpark, I would say, $75 to $125, which is pretty, that's not bad. Yeah, for a month. And there are a ton of options out there. If you do a search on the internet for stream hosting, you'll see a whole list of companies. If I think of the name before we finish up, I'll pass it on to you. But there's a company out of England that does a fantastic job, great quality and a good price, and they'd be a great source for you. So, kind of back.
I understand podcasting and recording. What kind of software and stuff do you do for streaming?
For us in particular, we started out using, is anybody familiar with Winamp? Most people use that to play MP3s. That's what we were using to stream. In fact, you can still today download a plugin for Winamp. It's called Shoutcast, and that plugin will enable you to broadcast out. So on your home PC, if you have a cable or a DSL connection, you download this plugin, put it in, configure it, and you can stream anything you want to from your house to about 8 to 10 people. What's that?
Winamp lets you turn the banners off.
Inside the player, you mean?
How do you get your ads up?
Oh, that's a different technology. Now, for us, that's how we started out. For us, we now do almost everything exclusively through Windows Media Player, which is all scripted. So, I don't know if you can... Can you enlarge that, Scott?
It's off.
Oh, is it? Well, then you wouldn't be able to see it. But inside the player, if Scott were able to blow that up, you would see... This took me forever to figure out how to do, but we show the cover art of what's playing at that particular time, and it changes. It actually updates every minute and a half. There's no magic that says, okay, the song has changed, do this cover art. I'm sure there is, but I haven't figured out how to do it yet. So we have it refresh every minute and a half to keep it up. So that part of it, we now stream using a Windows Media encoder. And it's designed for their player specifically. You can listen to a Windows Media stream through Winamp and some of the other utilities, but you don't get any of this scripting that you see inside the media player. You're right, you don't see that.
Do you do audio ads?
We did, and it was a mistake. It really was, because it made us sound like everything we were trying not to sound like. We did it because we were hoping to generate more cash, obviously. And they were great quality ads. They were coming in. I mean, for as far as ads are concerned, NBC TV, ABC, the Lifetime Channel. It was all national stuff. And then after a quarter, we got a check for $107, and I think we had played 5,000 of these ads. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to get screwed and do this and not like the way it sounds, then I'm just not going to do it. You know, but the underlying reason for stopping it was, it really did. I hated it in the alternative stream, especially because it just sounded like what we were trying to avoid, which was that whole. I mean, if you run commercials, you may as well get a morning guy that sounds like Mitch Hedberg and talks over all the music. So we didn't want to do that either. So I don't know if that spoke directly to your question enough.
How do you get, I guess, you're on 24 hours, right?
Right.
How do you get your playlists and stuff like that? I mean, with a podcast, you know, you write a script or you put things together.
Right.
How do you, especially with alternative and so much stuff out there, how do you come up with something new, or do you have something, you know how some stations will have tracks for a couple hours,
right,
and then it'll rotate? Do you do that?
Yeah, to a degree, but not anything like what you hear on commercial radio. We have a, I think on the alternative station we have, let me do the math, it's about 80 songs that we consider current.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on a traditional station, that list would be 30, 25 or 30. And we rotate those songs on a regular basis. We use scheduling software just like a normal radio station would, and set it up and say, okay, I want this track to play in this rotation, which would be twice a day.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay. The scheduling.
Right. That we actually, for the long time, there was a very inexpensive solution for that I used for a long time. The problem was, it wasn't very good. And so you would get... Another thing I hate about radio, you could set your clock by when we would play a certain song, and that would just drive me nuts too. So one of the first things I did when I got some investment money from the partners that came in was went out and invested in professional scheduling software by a company called Music Master. And it's really super. I mean, it does a fantastic, now it wasn't cheap, but it does such a good job of spacing music out. It's nice to see a song come up in the schedule and it says last time played 5 days ago. And even if it's something I really like, I like knowing that it hadn't played in 5 days. You know, that's great. It'll sound fresh. It's not, and it will do things like day parting, which is we have our day broken down into 4 6-hour segments. And the scheduling software will say, okay, you have to play in this 6-hour group, this 6-hour group, and this 6-hour group. And then if you can't play in this 6-hour group, you can go back and start all over again. So it manages the flow of the music pretty much just like what they use at traditional stations, except that we've tweaked it for the alternative, and especially we've tweaked it to do what pretty much what I wanted it to do. Now the country station, it sounds like anything you could hear on country radio, but why he's so successful is he's got a very I don't know why he's so successful. Drives me crazy. It's could be. There's a huge, huge country audience. And his station is programmed very tight and very much like anything you would hear in the car to my ear. But his audience, his base audience is huge. So they love it. So what are you going to do? Do you have a question?
You may have answered this already. You said that you were contacted by Windows.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever considered something else, RealPlayer maybe, or what?
RealPlayer, no, because I hate it. It takes over your PC. It puts all kinds of junk on there you don't want. So I've never given them a second thought. An opportunity that we missed that I regret was with iTunes. When they first came on, the guy sent me an email and said, we're going to list some stations. Would you be interested? In order to be listed, the requirement from us was that we would have to, in addition to doing these streams, which are Microsoft streams, we would have to do a pure MP3 stream. That's the only way iTunes would list you. But we only had to be able to support 100 listeners. So it wasn't going to be that expensive, and it was going to be a wonderful trade-off, and I wanted to do it really bad. And at the time I said, well, let me get some things sorted out. And it was right about that time that it looked like we were going to have to shut down. And so a few months passed, and I had forwarded the email to a friend who then discarded it. And now, to this day, and we're talking 2.5 years, I can't get anybody on the phone at Apple that has any idea who's in charge of that anymore. It's just this huge bureaucracy, and they don't know who does it. So I'd love to see us listed with the iTunes group, because we're kind of, and I know Scott and I talked about this, because he's of the Mac. You're Linux, that's right, but still an MP3 stream. Mac users are sort of neglected by what we do. And I'd like to see that change, because they're becoming a much larger part of the listening audience. There are a ton of Mac listeners out there. And if we were capable of going iTunes, that would be a huge opportunity for us. Probably double our listeners, I would think. So.
I have another unrelated question.
That's okay.
What type of marketing have you done?
You mean in terms of marketing who we are and what we are?
Development, but have you relied on just being listed in Windows Media Player as your main place to get your name out there, or do you do a lot of sponsorships or outside events or anything?
We haven't done any sponsorships, and yeah, the response from when we first got listed with Microsoft was enormous. And in fact, when my two partners came on a year ago in September, we started assembling the streams, and I don't think we got the country stream broadcast ready to go until January of last year. And I don't know why, but for whatever reason, Microsoft decided to feature the country stream that first month. And his listeners that first month were just off the chart. I mean, it's settled down, but at that point, his first month online, he streamed to just under 700,000 people. which was phenomenal because nobody had ever heard of it before. Another way I screwed up and got lucky is that I named it Atlanta Blue Sky. Starting it with the letter A got us listed way up at the top. That wasn't intentional. I actually worked for a company briefly called Red Sky Interactive. And when I was trying to think of a name for it, I wanted to associate it with Atlanta. And the rest of it was sort of just blatant plagiarism of what they had done, and mixed it with my idea and see if it would fly. And it never even dawned on me but that by doing that, it would bump us up to the top of the listings in all of the genres. So when people went to WindisMedia.com, we would be one of the first 8 stations they'd see. And then these people that had been doing it for 15 years and called their station X102, you'd have to scroll down for a month to get to them. So that was a total fluke. But that, more direct to your point, we have relied almost entirely on that because it's been such a beneficial relationship. What we'll probably do next, and what I'd like to see us do next, we're just now getting to this point. Literally, in these last 12 months, now that we're consistently streaming to 500,000 people a month, now we've got enough clout, I hope, to go to the ad agencies that do internet advertising for Smirnoff's, for Chrysler, for these companies, and say we'd like to offer you a banner package on our combined sites for X amount of dollars and see if somebody will take a bite. So that's probably where we'll head with it. Whether or not it'll succeed, I don't know, but we'll try. Yes.
Have you done any research on the demographics of your listeners? The internet user typically is younger, but they're really seeing that a lot of older people are listening, are using the internet now. Have you seen any shift in your listener demographics with that?
Not really a shift so much. We did actively go out and ask our listeners when it was just the alternative, if you don't mind, who are you, how old are you, where do you live, you know? And surprisingly, a lot of people were happy to tell us. And it's probably because even though at my age I love alternative music, what I love about alternative is probably not what I know it's not what my 15-year-old son loves about alternative, although we cross paths occasionally. So our particular alternative was always geared to be an adult alternative. Adult alternative was a format that had a lot of promise. When it first came out, Atlanta's never had a true adult alternative. So it's really set up, it's geared to be appreciated by an older listener. So for our alternative stream in particular, the demographic was strongest between, I'd say, 30 to 54, which is the best. Which at one point in time was a great demographic. I don't think it's seen the same way now. But the country station, I have no idea. I think some of them are 100. Some of them are probably 15. I just don't know. And the jazz station, ironically, the jazz station, the largest audience for it is international. He has a huge number of people. We get email from... we get just some great emails from some of the wildest places in the world. We used to do, speaking of demographics, what was hilarious was we used to have a company that from our website would track what a visitor's IP was, and it would show us exactly what country they had connected to us from. And there was a misspelling of somebody's name at one point in time that led them to an artist on our website when in fact they were looking for the king of this country. So, and it was a really tiny country out somewhere near Tibet. It was just bizarre to see where people were tuning in from. But the jazz stream does a great international audience. We get a lot of email from South America for that. The country stream, ironically, we get a lot of email from Eastern Europe. They love hearing that music because they don't hear it in any way, shape, or form in Europe. So, and more of what I do is pretty much the norm. Do you have a question? Oh, okay. Sorry. Anybody else?
Uh, Yes, I was going to ask you, have you been watching the latest CARP rulings, how they've been changing licensing or considering it? And have you thought about possibly having to change your business model to reflect the new, what was, you know, once a handful of $1,000 a year to $360,000 a year or more?
If that were to go through, it would shut us down, period. And there's a potential that it will. We hope not. The interesting thing about being a part of that hearing process was the real dogfight here about internet radio and the RIAA is really being held between the record industry on this side and a small handful of very powerful companies, not us, on the other. Companies like Yahoo, who has their launch, the Yahoo launch. MSN is a big player now in the online. Music Match is a big player. Those companies, the RIAA thinks, are generating a ton of money off of this. I don't think they are. I bet you they're spending. My guess is they're doing the same thing we're doing on a much smaller scale, which is they're spending 80% of what's coming in the door just to do it, in the hopes that at some point in time, our hope is that before something like that does go through, is that Wi-Fi will start to pass to cars, and then you can pick my station up in your automobile. Then I can retire probably, but not if that ruling goes through. And there you go. I don't know. It was after being a part of that process. That's probably going to be fought out over a couple of years, and there are. There are artists that don't want it to happen, which is a good thing, because they've seen what a benefit we are. One of the cool things we do is when you can't see it now. You can't see what's playing. And if you look right below where it says buy this CD, if you click on that, that takes you. That's a new CD. It probably won't do it. It takes you right to Amazon.com where you can, in fact, buy that CD. So. CARP, it's a royalty. I don't even remember what the acronym stands for. That's it. Did you catch that? Copyright arbitration royalty. What's the last one?
Panel.
Thank you. CRAP is what it should be. But it's CARP.
How much does Amazon pay you?
Oh. Not much. I think it's if the CD is $13.99, I think we get 6 cents. So we're doing Amazon a whole lot more good than we're doing us. Once again, we're on the small end of that hook. But the convenience of it builds audience loyalty. And it's a neat way to find music you're not familiar with. I think it's cool that if I hear something I don't like, I just click on this and, oh, I can get this right now over the internet. So that was one of the features we thought was really cool. So on the larger scale, with almost, I know Yahoo Launch does that, MSN, all those stations go to direct buy CDs, and a lot of them are starting to sell the music themselves in digital format. MSN, for example, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But the players that are fighting over that are much larger than us. The way it ended up the last time was that even with 500,000 listeners, we're pretty insignificant to them in that pond. So my hope is there will be a tiered approach to broadcasters as there was the first time. If they come back and tell me it's going to cost me that much, no, we won't be in business anymore. So.
You're speaking a lot of the legal issues. Is it a fair playing field between you here in the U.S. versus somebody maybe in Europe or China or somewhere else? Do they all play by the same rules?
No.
Can the RIAA get to them if they're that far away?
No, they can't, actually. In fact, there was a great deal of discussion, and I made mention of the fact before that one of our early stream hosting companies was based in Switzerland. There was a reason for that. If the ruling had gone against us, we were simply going to, at that time, register the business in Switzerland and continue to stream and just say to heck with it, you know, because no, it doesn't apply. That the RIAA is strictly for American and Canadian audiences, and they're just as brutal in Canada as they are here. So they almost have treated it as a form of piracy, which is a real shame, because it's not that at all. I know that people can capture the stream. I think, Scott, you had a device that was doing it there for a while, didn't you? Technology behind that is not too hard to sort out and find. We don't fight that. If you like it so much that you want to record it and listen to it, chances are you'll get tired of what you're hearing on your recording and come back and listen for another 8 hours some other time. So I don't worry too much about that. Do you have a question?
Yeah, one of the great things about the internet is that it's been making it a lot easier for independent musicians and more recently radio talk show hosts mm-hmm. to have their works heard by great numbers of people without going through the traditional RIAA or Clear Channel system.
Right.
Do you see a time coming over the horizon when you might be able to do an entire music or talk stream that owes no loyalty to the RIAA? And would they still have control over it even if it wasn't using any of their artists?
Oh, that's an interesting point. You almost gave my answer, because my answer was going to be, yeah, the way around it is you do it from a barge parked offshore and you don't play anything but local unsigned artists, and then they can't do a thing. It's not a bad concept, and it would be, I've certainly found over the 4 years of doing Atlanta Blue Sky that the quality of music from the Atlanta area is incredible. That we have played, in fact, one of the bands that we played, a group called Honestly, I don't know if any of you are familiar, I know you are, their last record got released and we started playing it, and listeners to our stream all over the country were buying it. Another band from Atlanta, Six Against Seven, the same thing. We gave them a lot of an airplay. It was a fantastic album, and we actually sold a lot of copies for them. So that would be the way around that. Is you would have to, I don't think the record company's never going to let go of the control over it. They make too much money off of it. The artist makes too little. Radio's got a real dirty deal that they've been running. Did any of you catch that they just had a payola situation with Franz Ferdinand was the band? I'll give you an idea. I'll give you two examples. And excuse me, I'm sorry, of all things, I came down with a bit of a cold, so I've got this constant feather in my throat, so bear with me if I have to cough a couple of times. In my days of promoting records, I actually had a programmer tell me that he would add my record if I bought him and his wife a new refrigerator. And I called my boss and I said, you can have this station if you want to buy a refrigerator. And they bought him a fridge. And that record got played that way. My last day in the record business was, of all places, in Atlanta, in a hotel in Buckhead, met a boss who told me that I lived in the perfect area, that I was going to need to get my radio people into the Atlanta area and get them laid. And I asked him if he wanted me to get them some cash and some cocaine for after sex. And he said, I'm not kidding. And I said, I'm not either. I quit. Your records aren't this good. So that was it for me. That was the end of the line. But that's how business is done. And it's a very unfortunate thing. You're a perfect example. Somebody that an artist that pours all of their energy and all of their creative ability into producing something that they really just want to share. Yeah, you want to make a living off of it, but your heart is in those songs. And then to find out that it's traded and bandied about in those ways is, I know it's disheartening. It was disheartening to me. I played music for a long time before I got into that side of the business, and I was shocked once I got deep enough into it what I saw. And so they're not going to let go of that. And this whole thing with the Franz Ferdinand deal recently was the same thing. I don't know what they traded, but they traded something. And once the Fed stepped in and said, okay, you can't give away drugs or cash anymore, what they would do is say, okay, we'll send two of your listeners to anywhere in the world to see any concert you want them to see, but I got to have this record and I got to get 40 spends out of it over the course of the next 2 weeks. And so hits are made. Has nothing to do with the quality of the record. So I hope that this type of thing prevails over the, in the long run, because it's the last thing the labels want to do is to have to pay me to play records, because I charge them a fortune. Yeah.
I'm from Richmond, and we have Richmond Independent Radio, which started online.
Richmond, Virginia?
Right.
Ah,
sorry. Yeah.
I'm from Norfolk.
Oh, hey. So they started online a few years back, mm-hmm. and just last year started broadcasting FM as well, and now have a lot of different, they day part with music in the morning, music in the evening, talk right. in the middle of the day. They've brought in some online personalities, things like that. Mm-hmm. So they're still independent, and they're still really seeking out different things in the community, but I think they're creating more revenue streams, and they kind of sound a little bit more like a traditional.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a step that more online radio stations or internet radio will be taking in the future just to stay in business and grow out?
I don't know. I'll tell you that I tried it to a small degree. I made the mistake of, I sat back one day and I said, well, maybe this isn't growing because I don't sound enough like everybody else. So, excuse me. I ended up trying to do it that way, and I hated it. I hated the way it sounded. So, I don't know. The other thing you see a lot now that again, this is sort of out of the marriage of the RIAA and radio. In the original CARP hearings, traditional radio came off the internet because they said, oh, if that's what you're going to charge, we're not going to do it either. Well, when they relaxed it, radio has gotten back into the game. So now you can see, what was the station we listened to up in Vermont? WEQX, I think it was. That's a traditional alternative station. It's not a whole lot different than 99X here, and you can stream them online just like you can us. The difference is what you get with them is a really brash person in the morning, a whole lot of commercials, a lot of interruptions, and every once in a while a really cool song. So it's basic radio. So if they go that way, then no, I think that's a mistake. I think what makes internet radio stand apart is not doing that. The key is, how do you make money and not do that? And that's what we're still trying to seek out. My hope was to get our audience up to a certain level and then go to ad agencies and see if we could do it through traditional internet advertising, and not pop-up ads, but just banner ads. You know, how much is it worth to Chrysler to hit 500,000 people a month? And if that pays off, then we'll be in good shape. Yes.
Have you worked with brand identification, as far as you know how stations always have these little jingles or whatever, you know, little, I don't know, couple second bites that they throw in with their call letters or their name, and sometimes it's really annoying. Sometimes they do it well. Have you experimented with
that? We've done it both ways. We've done it really well and really annoying, and it's kind of a mix of both at this point in time. We got real lucky. It was funny. We had when it started out. Gosh, this will definitely age me, but. Used to be when you bought a PC and it came with a sound card, it had a program, I don't know how many of you remember it, that had a talking parrot. You could type in and the parrot would say whatever you typed, and it was very mechanical sounding. That was our first voice. We used that thing to say just some wickedly insane and stupid things. And we had him say it every, you know, six or seven songs just for fun. I had a good friend, and we would be out at 2 a.m. and quite inebriated, and come up with one of these things, type it in, and have it on the internet going out worldwide within minutes, and the next day hear it and go, oh, holy Lord, what have we done? So, not too long after that, a listener of ours saw that we were playing, this was ironic, we were playing a local band called Outshine, and she, on a visit here, had heard that band and met them, and had gone back home to Liverpool, England, saw that we played this band that she couldn't believe it. So she sent me an email. I can't believe you play Outshine. And I said, that's great, because I can't believe you have a British accent. I think that would be super doing our liners. So she still is the voice for the alternative station. She has a wonderful voice. Scott can attest to that. She's just a beautiful British accent. It sounds so classy and elite. And she isn't, and we aren't. it's just a great voice. And we do now on the other streams. The partner that came from the country stream, he comes from a very produced radio background, and his bits in between songs sound exactly like what you would hear, much as I was alluding to earlier, on any other radio station. They're very well done. I think they sound great. They're not necessarily for my cup of tea, but they sound great. So, yes.
National advertising agencies buy their media based on very strict parameters of target demographics and this.
Yep.
Is the research out there for Internet Ready to give them the information they need to devote the advertising funds to that medium?
Yes and no. Arbitron started measuring certain webcasts. This falls back into the question that came up earlier about had we ever run streams or commercials inside of our streams. One of the other reasons we did that was because it would give us Arbitron tracking, and through that we would be able to see exactly who was listening to us and go back to these ad agencies. But the payout at the end of that first quarter, when we realized we'd run national quality ads for 90 days and made $107, and we were running these things once every five songs for 90 days, so we just said, I'm sorry, somebody's making a lot of money out of that, but it's not us, so we withdrew from it. But that would have been a great advantage. I'd love to have that. And you can buy it. We could buy into it and say, Arbitron, we'd like you to measure our station, but phew, they want a bunch of money. They really do. Because they know the payout eventually is good. And at some point in time, maybe we'll have to, but right now we haven't.
I don't understand why the advertising agencies would be dragging their heels on this. Whereas with radio and television, they just kind of have to take somebody's word for, you know, how many people there are listening. With an internet radio station, you can tell them exactly, second to second, exactly how many people are listening.
Right.
It seems to me that would be far more favorable.
Well, it's tracked differently in television, but it's still tracked through Nielsen, and they actually have families. I've never known one. You were one? You got a Nielsen box?
Yeah.
I finally met somebody. That's great. That's what I understand. Do you have to fill out something for everything you watch? And then
every person in the home has to fill it out.
Yeah, that's probably why not many people meet somebody that does it, because it's just such a burden. Yeah, and that was enough. But that medium exists, but you're right in that for internet radio, you can track it to a much greater detail. It's much easier to gather that information. And you would think they would be all over it. The curve of what people will pay for, the web is still in a real tricky place, whether it be Atlanta Blue Sky or Amazon.com. Amazon just had a horrible quarter, and there's concern that they may be in trouble financially. So most ad agencies, I think, look at the internet as a whole right now as, we could get some impressions out there, but is it worth the risk? I don't think they've come to a point where they've decided it's worth the risk for anybody below a CNN level. You know, if you're getting 10 million hits a month, obviously they're going to pay attention to that. But the fall off after that is very precipitous. You've got to really be generating some impressions to get there, to even get in the door. And we're finally just getting to that, I think, the bottom rung of that ladder. So I don't know. It's an avenue we're going to press and see. So, yes.
Do you think that satellite radio has slowed you down a bit? Because it blew up so rapidly, and the technology is more available.
It's an interesting thing, because it did blow up, and it would be direct competition for what we do if you didn't have to drag that thing around with you everywhere you went. I think, honestly, I think satellite's life is going to be short-lived, and I think what's going to kill it is I don't know if you're familiar with this, but already in Atlanta, Verizon has a Wi-Fi program where you can, if you sign up for it, you can take your laptop anywhere in the city and sit down and pull up a signal. The next step is when that gets into cars. And that's going to happen. And that's going to put XM and Sirius on a level where they have to compete with little tiny guys like me that are out there offering a product that we think is just as good. It's just not as available yet. So if we beat the curve, if we beat the RIAA and hang on until that point, then I think we're in a great position.
But you're not necessarily going to be able to deliver banner ads to people in the car.
No, that's a good point. We wouldn't be able to deliver banner ads. And I don't know how we would drive it at that point. But if you notice, let me back up. I do know how you would drive it. We'd drive it the same way they drive theirs, which would be a subscription audio system. That's the only way you could do it, which we offer now, a CD quality. So it really wouldn't be that much of a changeover, but you're right. You'd lose the banner ads, but you still couldn't go to the commercial format, or you lose the intent. So we wouldn't do that. We would go with a subscription system.
So you hook them on the low bandwidth, and then you get them to subscribe? Is that
Yeah, that kind of rips it down to nothing. Yeah, to a degree. I mean, we still offer, we stream far more for free than we do to premium subscribers. Our biggest audience is the free listener. And to this day, for all of the listeners he has, and for all the hatred I have towards him for having so many listeners, the country station has not one subscriber. So I don't know. You know, that's just something you play with. The most avid fans and the best subscribers for us have been to the alternative stream, and I think that's because it's people that are really, really just music fanatics. They want to hear something new. They want it to be constantly fresh. They want it to be constantly evolving. And so they've supported what we do. But by far, that the alternative has more subscribers than any of the other streams.
How do they pay?
We actually only offer one. We do everything through PayPal. We did that initially because it meant I didn't have to have a business license, and it meant I didn't have to go through all of that. And it's actually worked out once we did form an LLC, and we stayed with it simply out of convenience to us and to the customers. It's been almost flawless. There's been one instance where I felt like we got the short end of a stick because a customer went back and said, yeah, I paid for this, but I didn't want to. And they got their money back. So, and we lost. But we're not talking about a great deal of money here. We don't charge. Our subscription rates are $5 a month, $25 for 6 months, or $50 for a year. So that's not a whole lot of money. So even if you lose one of those, you just say, oh, well. Yes? I actually do. I actually spend a lot of time. I have to fight not to listen to what we're already doing. I have to listen to it to make sure it's still broadcasting, which last night it wasn't for about an hour. We had a power failure where our servers are. So I have to monitor it, but I spend a great deal of time listening. Not so much to podcasting, because the quality doesn't impress me very much, but for things like that, there are a couple of broadcasts out there that I go to. There is also a site that's been made available. It's a wonderful site, and this was brought in by our country partner, and it was a great asset. It's called newmusicserver.com, and they actually are distributing new bands to both record labels and anybody that wants to sign up to the service. So we had the affiliation through this partner, so I'm able to go in and check out new artists roughly about a month before they're available for sale. And it's a limited avenue. I'll be dead honest, I download a lot of things. If I get a hint that there's a good band out there and they've got samples on their site, I download it and listen to it. One of my favorite bands from last year, I found that way. It was a band out of Minneapolis called Halloween Alaska. Just did a fantastic CD. And I'd have never heard them anywhere else. So you do a lot of searching.
I understand how a lot of people are against having advertisements as far as audio ads on a radio station for internet.
Uh-huh.
But in the same sense, like with my station, we have a policy of no more than 6 minutes per hour that have gone pretty well with our listeners.
Okay.
And the other thing is, have you guys ever thought, as far as with the CARP hearings and that, fighting fire with fire against the licensing agencies in the record industry?
No.
It's like with what I have done is we got attacked by CESAC,
mm-hmm.
in specific.
They went after a few people.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with them, and what we ended up doing is they dropped against us because we threatened a lawsuit on them for unfair business practices because we told them, okay, you're going to charge FM radio one rate, yet you're going to charge us another rate.
Right.
That's unfair. We're the same market.
Right.
And the same thing with the rate of what they're actually giving, you know, artists. If they're going to give artists 100% of what they're collecting, fine, you know, I'll pay you. But
which
if you're
they
not
don't
gonna do it.
They don't.
Then
yeah.
I'm not going to pay you at all. Yeah. And they actually backed off. And right now we have independent licenses with every single artist.
That's what we do. We do the same thing. Pay a flat rate. And as you probably know, that's based on how much you bring in. You either charged $230 a year, I believe it is, up to a certain dollar value, and if they see X amount of profit, then that goes up exponentially. We've never had any problem not making a profit, so. I said no to your question initially because if it came down to if these CARP hearings go that way, would we fight fire with fire? No, because we don't have anywhere near that much fire. So I don't know. The only way to do it would be much the same way broadcasters did it back in the 50s, but it would take, obviously you broadcast, it would take all of us in a huge combined effort saying, okay, we're not going to play any of this anymore. Problem is, you couldn't get Yahoo to go along with that. You'll never get AOL or MSN to go along with that. So we're the bottom. We're the bottom feeders in this whole scenario. So I don't know that we could. I don't know that we'd have the artillery to. It's going to bear watching to see. I don't think at the end of the day. I think the same reason they backed off the last time is we're not hurting them, for crying out loud. You know, we're giving airplay to bands that obviously people want to hear, and Clear Channel doesn't have time to listen to. So, you know, it's nice to. That to me is sums up the best thing about internet radio is now you're in the room that we know that with two people that are broadcasting, and I don't know what type of music do you broadcast. Oh, cool.
And we have a Gothic station that's going to start up in 3 days called Gothic Seance Radio.
Fantastic. There's a great whole need for that.
What's your website? It's krradio.com, and then it's Contiga Broadcasting is the actual company name that we go under.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck. I think the Gothic market is going to do great for you. There's a real need for that. There's a real need for that.
4 million listeners.
Fantastic. It's I just don't see in the long run how the record industry is going to benefit by quashing people like you and I who are providing a service that they're just not going to get from the others. Excuse me. Yes.
I was going to comment that one of my friends using Live 365, I don't know if they're good or bad, started a one night a week talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And then every so often we play music. And the way he did the music was the artists that he's playing have authorized him to play their music because
they're
not IAA.
Right.
And it's getting them, he's found out that not only is he getting them sales, he's getting pre-release music.
Mm-hmm.
He's got now eight people now also doing shows on his station.
Oh, neat.
In other words, he's changed his one night a week talk show into a full music
yeah.
and
Well, they did the right thing, because if you go to the artist and you say, do you have any objection to me playing this music? Are you going to require licensing for me to play this music? And they say no, then you are free to play it, and the RIAA can't touch that.
Right. The one problem is we do our, I shouldn't say we. I archive the talk show portion, and I have to make sure I strip out all the music
because
we archive it to a web to another website, archives.org. And since we don't know exactly where the borderline is, since we have permission for the station,
right,
and a little bit of editing, but we have, I think he said we get 250 listeners live. And he told me that, oh, by the way, you're getting 500 listeners for additional listeners for my thing. So,
wow.
I don't know if it's I don't know if that quite counts as a podcast or it's just an archive of the live show, repeat on demand.
But that's great. That's fantastic. And you mentioned Live 365. They do a great service, and they've got a lot of stations that run through them.
I've heard a few people don't like them. So
is that right?
I didn't know if that was a good thing to mention.
Well, one of the things, you actually reminded me of something. One of the things that's bad about Live 365 is it's inexpensive to broadcast through them, but then they jump all over the middle of your stream with their ads. And so, yeah, I take that back. That's not such a great option. But they do offer a professional service that if you're willing to pay for it, they won't insert their ad content.
Right, the live shows don't have any ads in the middle. It's only when it's the non-live stream music that you have to worry about the ads.
Neat. Fantastic. Yeah.
Recently, I've heard that PayPal has frozen the accounts of several artists whose works include some mature content. Has PayPal ever threatened to suspend you if you didn't stop playing a particular song or anything?
No. I've never heard from PayPal in any manner like that. I doubt they've ever listened to our station. We don't censor the music we play. Now, I have, on occasion, if there were too many F words coming up back to back, I'd spread them out a little bit. But that's probably our approach to censorship. I don't take a lyric out or block it out or try to get a clean version of a song. The artist wrote it that way for a reason, so I'm gonna present it as he wants it presented at the end of the day. But I would be stunned if PayPal ever pulled something like that on a radio station. It's not to say they wouldn't. I guess they could. What was this? Who did they do this to? Do you know?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, and that's interesting.
So they have to comic book companies.
Have they really?
Yeah.
What are they turning into, Walmart?
A company who published an adult comic and they pulled their account because it was mature content.
Yeah, but eBay has a whole adult section.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
God willing, I'll never have to deal with that crap. I've never had that problem, and I hope we never will. So, now PayPal has actually been a great source for us. Do you use a system to take in subscription, or do you offer subscriptions?
I don't offer subscriptions because I see it as an enemy of internet radio, as a way of slowing it down. Because if you're going to charge, let's say, the $5 like you do,
right,
which is good that it's running good for you, but if you can pay $9 for satellite radio, and you're paying $5 for one, maybe a few stations, I don't see the value worth to be advertising it to a consumer.
I guess in our case, that's a good point. And I guess in our case, the reason we went with the, as I said in the very beginning, it started out as a donation to keep us alive and get us back on the air. And we decided to keep with it to offer the higher quality bandwidth, the 128K stream. If people wanted it, we said we'll keep that on there. It's never generated a great deal of cash, but the people that have gotten used to that CD quality stream, if it's ever down and they have to listen to the 32K for a couple hours, I get emails.
Yeah.
So, anybody else got any questions? Well, I want to thank you for having me here this year. I've tried for 3 years to be here, and I really enjoyed it, and would love to come back sometime.
Finally, an internet radio panel that does not suck.
Yeah.
Thank you.